Father God, it's so great to be here. It's so great to meet you here in this place at this time. I thank you for the gathering of each believer here this morning. And God, we just thank you for your Son, Jesus, for the hope that we have in Him. Thank you that you have made yourself known. We thank you for your sacrifice. We thank you for your love and your patience. We thank you how you walk with us each day. And God, may we acknowledge you. May we continue to turn to you. May we continue to seek you. And know that you will not leave us, God, that you will be faithful to us. Thank you for the gathering of the church here this morning. May your word be open to us, and may we invite you in this morning. In Christ's name, amen. Well, this is a sycamore tree. Maybe you've heard of a sycamore tree. I know the only time I've really heard of a sycamore tree is from a Bible story about a sycamore tree. But it looks like a great tree for climbing. If you were wanting to see something a long way away, or someone was coming to town and you were a wee little man like me, you may want to get up in that to see what was coming down the road. Well, there's a story of a wee little man named Zacchaeus who heard that Jesus was coming to town, a town that he was at. And not only was he a short man, but he was a not very well-liked man. And it didn't help that he was short, so if he was in a crowd, no one would let him get through. No one would let him to see what was going on. Oh, there's Zacchaeus, blocked the way. There's Zacchaeus, he's a bad guy. We don't want him to see what's going on. So him knowing his state and his position in life, heard about that Jesus was coming to his town. And so the best thing he thought was, well, I'm going to get up in a tree. And he gets up in a sycamore tree like this one here, and Jesus is approaching. You can imagine all the things he's thinking about, knowing who he is, the type of life that he lived, what he was known for. You know, by no means this man Jesus would give him the time of day. No one else in the town had given him the time of day. No one else would dare invite him in. No one else would dare talk to him, because knowing how he mistreated them, how he lied to them, how he stole from them, because he was a tax collector. You know, in that time, being a tax collector was not a job that many people would say was a respectful job to have, because of the ease it was to overcharge and overtax people for your own benefit. Well, so here Zacchaeus is. He climbs up in a sycamore tree. Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot where everyone was, he looks directly up in the tree, spots Zacchaeus, and says, "Zacchaeus, come down from there. I must stay at your house today." And all the people began to mutter, "He's gone to eat at the guest of a sinner. I can't believe this." But Zacchaeus stood up and says, "Look, Lord, here and now, I give half of all my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay them back four times the amount." And Jesus says, "Today, salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost." Amen for the love of Christ for the wee little man like me. Well, if a celebrity was coming to your house today, would they come to your house? Would you be worthy enough to have them enter in? You think about, of all the living people today, all the living celebrities, those sports stars or those actors or actresses or musicians or people that, authors that you enjoy reading from, if they were to come to town, why would they want to come to your house? Or would they? Would you feel honored enough to do that? Well, living in Oklahoma, I became a big Oklahoma City Thunder basketball fan. The team moved from Seattle and moved to Oklahoma City, and all the state of Oklahoma has fell deeply in love with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, I would love to have lunch with Russell Westbrook. And that would be an honor. If some reason he was coming to this area to do an exposition or do some charitable work, and thinking, man, it would be great if I could get my name in the hat for him to come eat with me. You know, there's some authors that I read that, man, if they were to come to this area and were doing a book signing, I would love if they had the opportunity to come. But would they? Of all the people, You know, would they even care about me? I mean, I'm a faithful fan, you know. I still watch all the Oklahoma City Thunder games, you know. I have one of my friends, I have an app that I'm able to get his email address and his passwords, and that's a pretty big deal. He's a good friend. Gave me his email address and his passwords to get to his DirecTV accounts so I can watch the Oklahoma City Thunder games on my TV through my phone. Because you have to live in Oklahoma to get the Fox Sports Oklahoma. Well, I got it. Well, and I'm a faithful fan, you know, and so I would love for, but why would he give me the time? There's so many other things. He would come to this area to do so many other important things. You know, one of my favorite offers, if he was to come to town, he'd have so many other things to do, and why would he care to do that? And yet, you know, there's people in our lives that we know we're not the center of their worlds. There are people that have so many things going on, but yet they sometimes do give us the time of day. You know, one of my good friends in Oklahoma, actually was my youth deacon, and then he became an elder at the church in Weatherford where I came from. And his name is Jay, but he's also a doctor. He's Dr. Jay. And, you know, being a family doctor in a small community, of course, he's got so many things going on. So many people's lives he cares about. So many people he's willing to give time for. And he always told us, I mean, he was my friend. He was my elder. He was also my doctor. And he said, you can call me anytime. I always thought, oh, is that true? Can I really call you anytime? I mean, I know I'm not the sinner. And he's just that way with all of his patients. But, you know, someone says that. Do they really mean that? Do they really mean they're going to always would be available? They're always going to answer the phone. Well, Dr. J has been there for me. He's taken time for me. And as someone who worked together with him in that church, he said, I need to meet together with you on, you know, maybe once or twice a month so we can, you know, communicate and share in the ministry work to hear. And he said, well, I have time. The only time I have is 6 a.m. 6 a.m.? Well, he's a doctor. And of course, you know, a lot of things happen in the afternoon. So, but he gave me that time. And I could still call on him. I call on him still today. And he may not be able to answer the call right away, especially if it's after 7 p.m. He may be busy with helping somebody else, but he will get back. And as a doctor, you know, he says, you know, when things are going on with your kids, you know, call me, let me know before, you know, save yourself a little trip to the emergency room or to the hospital, you know, and he is true to that. And I know I'm not the center of his world because he does that with so many other people. You know, one of my old professors, Kerry Holton, now he's like an author and speaks at seminars, and he has a home in Colorado. I've kind of lost touch with him from the 15 years I've been out of college, but I've caught up with him. He's got some blogs, he does some writing, and I've kind of got in more connection with him. And coming from ministry in Oklahoma to ministry out here, I kind of asked him, I said, would you be willing to be a mentor for me as I'm transitioning from, you know, youth ministry to preaching ministry? Can you be an advocate for me? And he said, of course, sure. Now, me asking that, knowing he's got other things, other people that are after, you know, other student, past students and people he's working with. But yet, about a month ago, he called me. He called me to check on me. He took time for me. You know, I didn't know at much what level we're going to be able to spend time. I mean, we do a lot of texting and some, you know, communicating through social media that way. But then when he called me, he took the time for me. And it's such a blessing to have those people, to know the Lord care, that these people care for you. Well, on the road here, on this journey of the road, we've been in Luke 24. These are just days after the resurrection, or days after the death of Christ. And Luke 24, we kind of catches up to where we are today. That these women, these disciples, gone to the tomb, found the tomb was empty. Angels appear and say, no, he's not here, he's risen, which caused other disciples to go rushing to the tomb. They go in, they clarify, there's linens there, there's no Jesus there. And now we get the story of these two disciples from 13 on that are walking away from Jerusalem to this town of Emmaus. And this section is usually called the Road to Emmaus. And as they're walking and talking about the things that have happened in Jerusalem, about the life of Jesus and the death of Jesus and the burial of Jesus and now the empty tomb of Jesus, they're discussing these things. And Jesus walks up along with them, joins them in their journey, joins them where they're at, joins them in their confusion and in their wondering, and walks along with them. And for some reason, they're kept from recognizing him. But he overhears what they're saying and hearing what they're talking about, hears their doubts and their disappointments and their anticipation, and then he steps into their lives and joins them and asks them, what things are you talking about? And they're surprised. You don't know these things? And he asks them, what things? And then they begin to tell them about Jesus of Nazareth, this man who spoke powerful words and had powerful deeds. We had hoped that he was the one that's going to redeem Israel, but our chief priests handed him over to be crucified, and he's died. We had hoped that he was going to be the one. But some of our women went to the tomb and he wasn't there. Some of our disciples also, our friends, companions went there also and didn't find the tomb. And they said that he was risen. And he says to them, last week we talked about, he says to them, how foolish of you to not believe all that you have been taught. And then Jesus begins to go through the law and the prophets and interpreting all that they've been taught as the gospel's being played out before their eyes, as Jesus is talking with them, walking along the road, begins to share with them about how all of this that is happening and all that they've been taught, all that they know, is the fulfillment of Christ, the Messiah, that you had hoped that he is the one, building them up to see that he is the one. And now we get to our passage today, Luke 24, 28 and 29. It says, as they approached the village to where they were going, Jesus acted as if he was going farther. But they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. So as they're walking and talking, they're going along the road, and Jesus is now explaining, yeah, remember Moses said this, and remember that the prophet said this, and remember in Isaiah where it said this, and remember in Micah where it said this, and remember in Malachi where it says, remember all these things about the scriptures that you've been taught, and this is the Messiah and how it's going to happen. And as they're talking, all of a sudden the disciples stop. And Jesus is acting as if he's going further. He's just walking along. He didn't realize they stopped, and they stopped because they got to Emmaus. This is where their journey was. This is where their journey was leading them. Back home. Back to where their life was. You know, they stopped in the middle of, while this big picture is being laid out by the Lord, is taking them back through all the scriptures up to this point in their life to where they are. And then, again, them not recognizing, them not knowing it was Jesus, but Jesus, we know it's Jesus. And it was Jesus, but they're not seeing the big picture of who this is, and they're starting to hear all these things that are being stretched out, that this is what's going on here. The big picture of God is being revealed to you right here in your midst. And they're just not seeing it. And what they see is that this is our stop. This is our home. This is where we need to go. And they start to turn to go in and realize, wait, he's not going with us. He's going further. There's more going on here. There's more going on with this man's life. And they see him going on, and they might be thinking, well, of course he's got more going on. He knows all this knowledge. Of course, who are we to even think that he would spend time with us? I mean, other people need to hear this. Other people need to hear this teaching. Other people need to know about what he's laying out in front of us. And he's laying out this big picture, but they're stopped and go, this is our stop. And Jesus was acting as if he was going further, because there is more. There is so much more than just these two disciples' lives. And we know there's so much more, but they see him going further, and now they could have been in a little tension here going, could you stay with us? You know, it's like that Dr. J says, call me anytime. Sometimes I'm a little apprehensive. Well, should I call him? He's probably busy. And he usually is busy. But would he take time for me? You know, or my professor, you know, I know he's got so many things he's working on. He may be doing a seminar in this place. He may be working on writing something. He may be, you know, doing something else. It's, you know, could I call him? Could I message him? But Jesus acted as if he was going further, and they do ask. They actually urge him strongly. Actually, they're a little bit, not so apprehensive. They urge him strongly, like, please, stay with us. It's nearly evening. The day is almost over. See, there's so much more going on. You know, even for us, there's so much more going on than we actually pay attention to. There's more in life going on. There's a bigger scene going on than just my everyday stuff, my everyday concerns, than just my family and my marriage and my kids and my job and my hobbies and my place where I'm at. There's more going on, but yet we know there is, and we have to kind of like be reminded of that and go, oh yeah. But we struggle sometimes to see the big picture of what's going on, because this is my spot. This is where I'm at. This is where I live. This is the things that I feel like I've been called or been given or where I've led myself to. See, the disciples also, I believe, struggled with this. And I know that they struggled with this because of some other scenes that we're going to look at this morning. They struggled when Jesus reveals earlier, Jesus reveals the truth of his glory at his transfiguration. We see this story laid out in Luke chapter 9, verse 28 and following. See, they had Jesus right there with them. Here they know it's Jesus. He wasn't kept from them recognizing who he was. And it says in Luke 9, 28, about 8 days after Jesus had said this to them, he's talking about the kingdom of heaven, he took Peter and James and John up to a mountain to pray. And while he was praying, his appearance and his face changed, and his clothes became bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in their glorious splendor, talking with Jesus, and they spoke about his departure, which was about to bring the fulfillment of Jerusalem. So they've been brought up with Jesus to this mountain to pray, and as he's praying, this amazing big picture is being seen out before him. Jesus' appearance begins to change, and Moses and Elijah shows up. And this huge big picture is being displayed here about the glorious splendor of the Lord. And what is Peter and his companions doing? They're sleepy. They're very sleepy, it says. And it says, when they became fully awake. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This huge thing is happening. I mean, Jesus' appearance is changing. And there's Moses and Elijah. This awesome scene. I mean, this prayer is happening and he's being transfigured. And, huh? What's going on? They were sleepy. And it says, when they became fully awake, they saw his glory. And so their eyes become clear and they see his glory. And then they, whoa, Moses is here and Elijah's here. And they see these two standing there. And they say, Peter says, hey, master, it's good for us to be here. And he thinks he's doing right here. He says, let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And when he's saying these shelters, let's put up three tents of celebration. All three of you are here as if they're all the same. You know, we got Moses, we got Elijah, we got Jesus, we're all the same. I mean, yeah, I like what it says here. He did not know what he was saying. I mean, he thought he did, but in his little limited mind, he thought he knew this was right. I mean, for one, this big scene's going on, they're not awake for it, and then they see it, and they think they kind of can see what's going on, but they don't quite get it. He says, let's celebrate all three of you at the same time here. And while he was speaking, a cloud envelops them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. A voice from heaven, from the cloud, says, this is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. When the voice had spoken, they had found Jesus was alone. The disciples kept this to themselves and told no one at that time what they had seen. And so, they didn't know what was going on. Cloud appears now, and then he says, identifies Jesus. This is what I want you to see. This is my son. With him I have chosen. You listen to him. above all others. See, there's just so much more going on. So much more, but yet they have a hard time getting out of themselves. Their tiredness, their limited understanding of what was being laid out in front of them. And there's a time that a glorious, hate to say it glorious because I don't quite get it. Some may say a glorious appearance of a series that came out, the Harry Potter book series. You know, big fan. There's a lot of, you know, phenomenal series that millions and millions have poured a lot of money into. You know, the movies that have come out, all the millions and millions and billions of dollars that have spent on that industry, on that show, and it, you know, it's the mythology involved. You know, and generally, I love those kind of shows. I love the Lord of the Rings series. You know, I love Star Wars. I love a lot of that sci-fi stuff. You know, I love a good story. I love a big journey. I love all the things that are wrapped up in those. I love the idea of different worlds that are played out here by these writers. You know, but I just don't get Harry Potter. You know, if you want me to take a nap, put on a Harry Potter movie. I don't know how many Harry Potter movies I wasted money, fall asleep in. And my wife is like, what is wrong with you? You don't get this. This is awesome. And so many people, I tell them, are you crazy, Harry Potter? Are you kidding me? Every time it comes on, I like wake up and I'm like excited to watch it. You know, I just don't get it. I mean, there's so much more going on. There's this story and there's this action and there's this whole world that's being laid out and so many people love it. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. It's okay if you get it, but I just don't get it. You know, but I'm like these disciples here. This big scene's going on. Everyone's like, yeah! And I'm like, ready to go to sleep. I just don't get it. Well, even the disciples, another time where they just didn't get it, when a bigger scene was going on, was the time even when Jesus was sharing the sorrow of his sufferings at Gethsemane. When we go to Matthew chapter 26, so much more going on. When Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and in trouble. And then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. So here is this moment of sorrow. And he even explains to them, hey guys, I'm feeling the burden of life right now. My soul is burdened to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. You know, as friends, if you had a situation where your friends came up to you and said these kind of things, you'd kind of wake up a little bit. Hey guys, I'm really burdened here. Can you watch out for me real quick? Can you wake up and look out? Because I'm in a hard place right now. But going a little further, he falls with his face to the ground and he prays, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup pass from me. Yet not my will, but your will be done. See the magnitude of the scene that's going on here, what he's pouring out. But then he returns to his disciples. He finds them sleeping. I mean, there's so much more going on here. So much of a bigger picture. And he even told them. And he pours out his life and they're sleeping. And so he says, could you not watch for me 1 hour? And he asked Peter, watch and pray that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. And I don't know if he was saying about their bodies and their spirits being weak, but his body and his spirit was being weak. He was being challenged with the burden of Calvary that the Lord was going to be putting on him. And so he goes away a second time. My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, may not my will, but yours be done. And when he came back a second time, he finds them sleeping. Because their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away once more and prayed a third time, saying the same things. And he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping? Are you still sleeping? Look, the hour is near. The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let's go. Here comes my betrayer. Jesus prays and for sorrow, and there's so much more going on. But yet their eyes were heavy and they were so sleepy. Oh, these poor little boys. These poor little boys. You know, these two disciples on the road to Emmaus, they're just poor little boys. You know, we talked about last week as they're not quite understanding what's going on. And when he says to them, how foolish of you, not using it to hurt their feelings, but as you would tenderly to a child, like saying, oh, hey guys, I'm so sorry. You're just not getting it. Let me tell you. You know, these little boys that are going up on the mountain and Jesus is being transfigured and they get tired. They're not getting it. You know, Jesus is saying, I'm sorry. I'm going through a point of sorrow and trouble and I'm about ready to give my life. And he's praying out his tension about God's will and his will. And the disciples are just, these little boys are just tired. You know, and sleepy. I can relate to those sleepy little boys. Not just in the Harry Potter movies. But actually in times when something bigger or greater was going on. And at York College, where I went, we would go on these prayer retreats, a weekend away to a campsite. And one of the years, our campus minister themed it around prayer. And we were staying there over the weekend, and we stayed up late night, Saturday night, into the wee hours of Sunday morning, and decided we're going to have a late night communion service. And took us up to an upper room. One of the lodges there had an upper room. And so kind of putting us back in that place of the upper room. We got to the upper room. It was about 12:30 in the morning. But it was on the Lord's Day on Sunday at that point. And these low tables sitting around where we could kind of, you know, recline at the tables. And someone made some homemade communion bread and had these big loaves there of unleavened bread. Had these big cups of the juice so we could actually, you know, we could take more than just a sip, and we could actually commune with it and discuss. And there was some great singing that was themed towards that, great lessons and great talking and great scripture, and was really led through this whole long time of communion. And about 10 minutes after I laid on one of those cushions and sang a couple songs, be still. I was so tired. My eyes were so heavy. I was so tired, but yet this beautiful, awesome thing. And I would wake up once in a while and people would be crying. You know, they're getting in the thought of the communion, and I would fall asleep and people would wake up and they'd be having joy because of the celebration, the different themes that they were bringing out. There's just so much more going on. But yet I was too tired. I was too tired. Well, back to the road here. As they approached the village they were going to, Jesus was going farther because there was so much more. Of course, we know it was Jesus. They didn't know it was Jesus. But whether it was Jesus or not at this point, he was a good teacher. And these guys had to be thinking, yeah, this guy's got more of this to share to benefit the world by his knowledge of what he's talking about than us. He was going further, but they stopped and knowing this is where they are. And they ask him, would you stay with us? And for one, it's almost evening because we're tired and we're hungry. And this is where we live. We got this life here. We got job. We got family. We got things to take care of here. And he says, stay with us. And perhaps the disciples maybe they remembered something the Lord had taught them earlier about asking and about seeking and about knocking. Now, he was talking about ask the Lord and seek the Lord and knock to God. Them not knowing was Jesus, again, we know it's Jesus, but he's got something, he's got some knowledge that they're benefiting from. They say, stay with us. And they ask, you know, it says, ask and you shall receive. And there was a time in Oklahoma, and our group in Weatherford, every February, our guys and girls in our youth group, we'd have special guys and girls split classes where the guys get to talk about, you know, young men's issues and young women's issues, and we'd do some special things for a month. Well, during one of those months, one of our families in our church had some connections with the OU Sooners, and And does someone need help back there, maybe? Okay. That's probably good. And so this one family had connections with the OU Sooners, and actually one of their sons, older son, had coached one of the defensive coordinator's children in some baseball. And so they had a connection with Brent Venables, who's defensive coordinator at OU, and tried to see if he could come out and speak to our group. And they also tried to see if perhaps one of the players could come out. Well, we lived just far enough away where it was beyond their legal limits of sending players. They had certain restrictions on how far they could send players or coaches to go speak. And so they were a little defeated, but then the lady, she asked, well, could we come there and do something and have one of your players or coaches speak to us and be an influence on us? And so because she asked, we took the Sunday afternoon, we got invited to their practice facility. We actually got to go and tour their practice facility and then their locker rooms. Now, most people on tours don't get to go see the locker rooms. And they were telling all of this. Maybe they lied to us, but they said most people don't get to go this far deep into the OU. And then they put us in their filming room. And now filming room is like hardwood floors, stadium seating, all their OU paraphernalia around, all their awards, and they show you this film of their highlights. You know, they bring their recruits into this place and they show you these videos. Now I'm a Nebraska Cornhusker fan. And so I was like, okay, I know the OU Sooners are pretty good. And so I'm watching that. By the time I'm done, I'm like, these guys are pretty good. I think I like the OU Sooners now. You know, but we got invited into there. We got toured around by Brett Venables, the defensive coordinator. Got to go in the locker room, go watch this awesome film. And then one of their punters, Tress Wade, I think he plays for the NFL now. He came, he's a Christian, and he came and spoke to us and encouraged us in that way. Well, that wouldn't happen if no one had ever asked. You know, and so because they asked, we received. You know, if you seek, you'll find. You know, how many of you ever lost something and you had to go seeking for it? And you're just tearing your house up and down, you're going out under every corner, every nook and cranny. But as you're looking for that thing, and whether you found that thing you're looking for or not, as you're seeking, did you ever find something else along the way? Something else you're like, oh, I can't believe I found this. You know, and maybe you find it, and maybe if that thing wasn't so important, you let it go. I mean, maybe you keep seeking until you find that thing, but you find other things, but you never will find that unless you start seeking. And you never know what you're going to find until you start going there. And so, they ask, and they seek, and they knock. You know, I think about the story of a film, one of my favorite films is Sandlot, the movie Sandlot. And about this little young man moves to a new town, and he's making friends, and he sees his boys playing baseball, and he has the courage enough to go start playing baseball with them. So as they build through the story and build their friendship, and as they start playing ball, every once in a while the boys would get lucky and knock a home run over the fence. And if it was over the left field fence, there was no getting it back. No getting it back, because that's where Mr. Merle Acres lived, the evil man and the big nasty dog that would kill you if he even smelled a little piece of your skin, and if your hand got over there, the dog would chomp you, and so there's no going there. And they lost every ball they could ever imagine. Every penny they spent on balls, they kept, I mean, these kids were pretty good hitting all their balls over the home run fence. And so got to where the young boy, the new kid in town, his dad had a baseball that was signed by Babe Ruth. He had no idea who Babe Ruth was. And so he went home, I got a ball, gets the ball, they come and play with it. Eventually he knocks it over the fence. Now the story unfolds here. We gotta get that ball back. Well, in the process of them trying to get this ball back, they try all these different maneuvers, try to get this ball back to where the fence falls down. Now this dog breaks off his big, huge, you know, chains and starts chasing these boys throughout the whole town. It's a big chase, trying to get these kids from breaking into his property. The dog finally knocks over the kid who has the ball, gets on top of him. It seems as if the dog's going to chomp his face, and he gives him a big old slobbery kiss. He's not a big nasty dog. He's a nice little, I guess, a big sized puppy. And now they feel bad. They've broken down this guy's fence. They got to get this dog back. The dog, you know, slobbery, kindly wagging his tail all the way back to Mr. Knoll's house. Again, now they're still terrified. The dog's not so bad, but Mr. Knoll's probably pretty bad. They knock on the door. And the guy comes to the door and, "What's all this ruckus? What's all this noise?" And, Mr. Morrow, we got your dog and we broke down your fence and he says, "Well, what, you lost, what, you lose something?" He goes, "Yeah, we lost the ball." He says, "Yeah, well, if you would have knocked, I would have got it for you." And so all this time, if they just would have knocked, and trying to find out he was a nice guy. He had all this other interesting baseball paraphernalia, and he invited them all in, and they didn't know what they were staying away from. So Jesus is on this road with these disciples, and there's so much more going on. They stop, and he asks them, "Stay with us. It's nearly evening. The day is almost over." And he goes in, and he stays. They invite, they ask, they knock, they seek, and he stays. Yet do we always recognize Jesus in our life? Do we always recognize him? In our everyday, we're stopped here. We got this going on. And seeing the big picture of the life that he promises and the hope and the place we have in his kingdom and in his life. You know, Jesus already left. He already left it all to come to us, to come to this world. And in John, lays it out, says, he was in the world, though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet, John 1:12, yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of a natural descent, nor of a human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John writes and says, we have seen his glory. I ask you, church, have you seen his glory? Or are your eyes heavy? Are you kept from seeing what has already been made known? You know, are you kept from recognizing it? Kept from understanding it? The scriptures are being laid out. Can you hear it? Can you see it? Can you understand it? Can you understand the suffering of the Lord? After asking, after seeking, after knocking, John says, we have seen his glory. Have you seen his glory? I want you to know that the Lord has time for you. There's so much more going on, so many people to save, so many things that you would think, why poor old me? Why little old me? Why would he take the time to spend time with me? But he does. Why not you? Will you invite him to stay with you? If you do, he will stay. When they ask, will you stay with us? It says, he stayed and went in with them. The disciples invited him and he stayed. Church, wake up. Don't be sleepy. I get sleepy. I get tired. I get hungry. I get concerned about other things. Don't count yourselves out. He wants to stay and eat with you. He wants to eat with you and stay with you where you are right now, in these pews right now, wherever you're going to your home in a minute, wherever you're going to eat. He wants to eat with you. He wants to spend time with you. He cares about every part of your life. He cares about where you work. Cares about your kids. Cares about the things you spend your time doing. He cares about all those things. He has time for you. It took Zacchaeus to get up in a sycamore tree to see Jesus. And I want you to know that I want to be a sycamore tree this morning to lift you up to see Jesus. You might be thinking, I'm just a poor little old sinner like Zacchaeus, poor little old, there's no way. You know, if he knew what I was about, if he knew where my heart was, there's no way for you to come up and see Jesus and hear him saying, I'm coming to your house today. Will you let me in? Why not? Why not today? Wherever you are on this path, wherever you are on your journey, you may say, this is my stop, Lord. There's so much more going on. and that so much more is all for you. And so will you invite him to stay with you this morning? I'd like to invite you this morning as we stand, as we sing.